The following talk was given by Jed Larson at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on July 20th, 2025. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see everybody. I was thinking if you had the task of going out to a group of people, kind of a whole variety of folks, maybe just everyday, ordinary people, maybe some scientists and artists, and you'll ask them all to give you kind of a description or an expression of what they think breath is. You can sort of imagine what you might hear back from them, a lot of different variety. So you maybe get something very, just sort of common sense idea of what the breath is, you know, just our breath. And then a scientist will maybe have a very precise definition or like a medical type of definition. And then you ask maybe the artists, and, you know, it could be different types of artists. Maybe you get a poetic representation of what breath is. Or even, you know, I was thinking a painter might try to express what breath is through an oil painting. And so you'd have all these different ways of expressing breath. And then I think you can just sit down, just like we are right now, and experience the breath. And in thinking of all those different renderings or expressions or descriptions of what breath are, I think it's pretty obvious that none of them are like the definitive definition. Like we would like go with this one and say the rest are invalid, basically. So you have this whole experience of description, and then you also have just the experience of breath. I bring this up kind of in light of maybe it's a little bit of a image of how these things can really be together. They don't have to, you know, the definition doesn't have to be insisted upon. You know, we don't have to land on this exact, you know, way that we think we're explaining what's happening. So the breath can just simply be the breath. There's actually no conflict between, you know, an idea about whatever it might be and just experience itself. And this, for me, in some ways related to the teachings, is a phrase called nothing is hidden. There's a couple different permutations of this. Nothing is hidden. Nothing is missing. Also, there's a phrase, hidden in plain sight. It is something that you run across in Zen as well. So here, just to sort of explain a little bit what I'm thinking of, this hidden in plain sight is that whatever it might be, you know, it could be an artist's rendering of what, like an expression of breath or something that kind of evokes something, or experience, actually what it is, whatever it is never hidden. Whatever experience is, it's never hidden. There's nothing missing, actually. There's a phrase that I ran across recently. This is from a 9th century Chinese Zen teacher named Yun Men. And he said, within heaven and earth, through space and time, there is a jewel hidden inside the mountain of form.
Hidden inside what?
Hidden inside the mountain of form. And this, I think, is aligned particularly with the phrase hidden in plain sight. So, the teacher is speaking here of this mountain of form. So we think of the everyday world, of breath, of thoughts, of like a tree branch or a rock or anything. This is the mountain of form that Yuen Men is talking about. And it seems like the usual phrase in plain sight would be that we see it like a tree branch and there it is. It's just in plain sight. You know, we can see it. We can identify it. But here, this teacher is using, or in Zen, we use this phrase in plain sight much differently than you would normally think of. This in plain sight is a reality where nothing is hidden. So in some sense, when we, if we think that that tree branch is in plain sight and we identify it, we can almost say that it's hidden in the idea of it in some sense. Perhaps there's a bit of confusion, or it's hidden inside a description for us when we lock down and identify something very specifically. But as the teacher is speaking of here, Yuen Men, what is actually taking place is this jewel. And what he's speaking to is just being at ease or taking comfort in that actually nothing is hidden. So this mountain form is reality itself. And I guess we could also say that this jewel is the opportunity to understand the quality of thinking in the description that might be going on for us in any particular moment when we're identifying something specifically and not noticing the quality of thought that's going on there. So this is not about vilifying thinking at all, but it's actually just to recognize when thinking arises, we can just see what's happening. That thinking is there. Nothing is hidden. Thinking is right here. There's no problem with it. So, of course, we spend a lot of time thinking, and if you do meditation at all, you find that when we focus on our mind a little bit, you can see that thinking is sort of popping up pretty often. So that's what our practice is, just to notice that. And in noticing that, lose my train of thought here a little bit, but basically what we're noticing is this complete nature of reality. So we may think that things are hidden from us, like there's things obscured and so forth. The example that came up is, you know, maybe a grandmother or a great grandmother, somebody who's passed along, we may think that they're not here. And, you know, that just seems like a rock solid way of thinking about it, right? But in what way? I mean, what grandmother is absolutely vital to what's happening here, you know, for Jed. To say that she's not here doesn't make any sense also. So I think we can look at thinking and how it's limited in so many different ways. Actually, what's true and real is just experience itself. And this really is, this experience is as simple as just breath itself. And we can always come back to that. I was in the Boundary Waters just recently. We had the opportunity to paddle in up close to the Canadian border. And the lake that we are on was a couple hundred feet above the next lake that we are going to take a look at. So there's a sharp drop down, about 100 foot, 50 foot drop where there's waterfalls and so forth. And instead of going down the trail, we actually went up a little bit to the bluff and we were overlooking Rose Lake and then off into Canada, the stairway, the portage and waterfall there. And just sitting up in that peaceful environment, looking down at the lake, I had the experience of seeing the wind. And you may think that's not possible. You can't see the wind. But on the surface of the lake, from a distance in particular, you could see these streamers of ripples and kind of like pressure zones where it was calm, actually, where it was maybe two windy spots coming together and then like a strip of calm in between. And you could see the leaves rustling, particularly on the aspen trees. Those little tiny leaves are flipping back and forth. As we got back to the portage, there was a little swirl of dust coming up. So, for me, it was, right there, that's the wind. You're seeing the wind somehow. But our mind kind of like says initially, no, that's not possible. You can't see wind. How's that? That's not possible. And, I think with a kindness, we can sort of step back a little bit and recognize the desire of the mind to resolve the matter. So, you think of saying that I saw the wind. We want to say that's possible or it's not possible. I just want to know which way it is, basically. But in Zen, actually, what's most important is understanding that nothing is hidden. It's not about resolving, maybe in some ways kind of a riddle or something like that. So we can actually enjoy, a poetic rendering of or an imagery of breath. We can enjoy sort of a riddle about the wind, and that's all perfectly fine. And this is all showing up in, the form of this mountain of form. So that's what experience is. It's showing up as this scenery of form. But perhaps we don't always understand that what true experience is, what is happening here is actually true reality. So that jewel hidden in the mountain of form, if I was to sort of reformulate that in another way that a different Zen master kind of spoke of it, perhaps you could say that what aspect of the mountain of form is not the jewel itself? So every experience, whatever, however it shows up, this is the unhidden truth, this jewel. So regardless of whatever kind of undisputed description we might be kind of arguing about, we can actually enjoy those different interpretations, the different descriptions, obviously appreciate what science brings to us. Like a medical understanding of what breath is can come in pretty handy if you are in some particular situation that you might imagine. So, another example that came up is, out in the garden here, if you were to stand out just out on this side, you'd experience a tree there. And that tree is a, Saskatoon tree. It's a Juneberry tree and it's a Serviceberry tree. And you can see that, like, if we get caught in, which one is right? We're sort of struggling with that, or that tendency of mind wanting to resolve it can be there. But then also you can enjoy, it's kind of funny that there's three different terms for it. They all have sort of different histories to them. But if we are caught in that, we're missing what is actually plain, hidden in plain sight. So it's easy to get lost in those different definitions. So in meditation, what we're doing is we're continually collecting our mind back to what this is, coming back to what is very straightforward, what is not hidden. So sitting quietly in a room and understanding what is actually completely unveiled, just reality as it is. Of course, a lot of times with Buddhism, we'll think of what is unhidden and almost make that into an object and kind of want to go after that. Absolute truth may seem hidden in some ways, but I think that's sort of a beautiful aspect of Zen is we're always directed back to everyday experience, ordinary life. It's not kind of, if you look at a lot of the Zen teachings, you won't find a lot of maybe sort of florid imagery of what enlightenment is. It sort of refrains from that. It's always actually bringing us back. I mean, in some ways that can be beautiful. I'm sure there's many ways of doing that, but I particularly appreciate Zen's tradition of just coming back to what's ordinary and finding the beauty in that itself. Joshu, another Zen master, talked about when he was asked, what is the essence of truth? Joshu said, well, do you know the oak tree in the front courtyard? And that was his answer to this question of what truth is. So again, bringing us back to, you know, if we're just standing there in the oak tree, nothing more needs to be said. It's just very simple and direct. So we're just returning to our life. And of course, we know that this life is not hidden. It's not hidden at all. They just slow down a little bit. That's very, I think that can be quite clear that we know that it's everything, or this life that's happening. So if you put your hand in water, there's no mistaking at all. There's nothing mistaken. I think it kind of is similar to how we can look at this teaching of nothing is hidden. When we sit in our practice, there's also this unmistaken experience. It can't be mistaken. Also, you can't make a mistake either. Sort of to play with those words a little bit. It seems like maybe we'll have a pretty wily mind in meditation, and it seems like things aren't going right, and it seems like we're making mistakes. But yes, it is actually true that you cannot make a mistake in meditation, no matter how distracted you may think that you are. All we have to do is resume this practice. The distracted mind, the wily mind, is what human experience is. I think what, again, Zen is pointing us back to is really understanding the human experience. It's almost like being human or being a sailor, and there's wind, you know, and waves. It's what being a sailor is. So we perfectly carry out this practice, this human situation. And, you know, maybe there's strong gusts that come through, but really, you know, you can imagine that sailor just carefully watching the wind, and we can respond if difficulties come up in life, that we're really here. We're not trying to escape anywhere. And I was thinking also, I was talking to somebody about a particular sitcom recently, and I was thinking, no matter how wily your mind is or how obsessed you might be, you can take comfort in the fact that you will never be as bad as George Costanza, which is the person who we were talking about. So you can't make any mistakes. It's just about resuming this unmistakable experience.
Costanza was fully Costanza at all
yep,
times.
Exactly. It was.
He brought his whole self.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe there's been some moments where I've been basically Costanza. So yeah. It's just like. There's also an image that came up for me, a snow leopard. If you recall what a snow leopard is, they're kind of spotted leopard in their environment. Sort of if you picture yourself in a remote mountain range above the tree line where it's sort of scattered rocks and snow. And maybe you're on one side of the valley and on the other side is this kind of barren expanse. And in there is a snow leopard completely hidden. And sometimes you see pictures of this where it's just like they tell you a snow leopard's there and you just can't see anything at all. And, but maybe we'll spot it and we'll pick it out. And we'll kind of think, okay, there it is. I got it. And it's interesting here, again, just noticing our experience and what's happening there. So how quickly that can become hidden in an idea. So we've identified that one thing, that snow leopard. And how quickly that happens for us. But really... again, as I said before, the idea is not the problem. It's just to understand how we identify, how this thought comes up about something, the definition of something. And we do it in so many different ways in our everyday life. And it just has a beauty of its own of how we think and communicate. But so often we don't take the time to just really watch what's going on, to watch our mind, to see this nature of thinking that's happening. And that's really the opportunity that we have. In the song of Jewel Mirror Awareness, you have a similar image of the egret, the white egret in the bright moonlight. So they've disappeared. The egret has disappeared into the whole picture, basically. And I actually found an older translation of the following lines, which seems particularly good for understanding this. It says, when you array them, they are not the same. So if you just take the egret in the bright moonlight, we can understand the difference between those, through our thinking. We can put them side by side and they're not the same in that respect. So we can use thinking in useful ways, try to use it in compassionate ways. So the idea is not the problem. But again, what we're looking at here is an understanding that nothing is hidden. And then the following line after that in the Song of Jewel Mirror Awareness says, or kind of in my words here, I say that when all things are situated together, so in other words, when reality is this true unfragmented, when we truly understand the unfragmented nature of what reality is, of wholeness, this is clear. The nature of things is clear. It's not sort of obscured by or confused by ideas at all. But yet ideas can be there. We can use those in appropriate ways. So that's pretty much all I have today. I don't know if that kind of spurred any questions or comments that you might have. Or if you've run across that phrase before, nothing is hidden. It's the title of a book. So it is related to a teaching of Dogen, who's a 13th century Zen master. as well, but I didn't bring any of that in today. So any thoughts at all? Yeah, Ellen. Yeah, I was thinking
Yeah,
that
I don't suppose you can give me an answer for
too. No,
that one. I've
hopefully
only been
not.
thinking about it since I started coming here. It's hidden body.
That's right.
Thank
So
you.
Ellen's talking about the calligraphy that's out in the other room here. When Dharma Field was founded, and it was where the church was being transformed into the center that you see here. MZMC over here, not too far away, kind of the original Zen Center, donated this calligraphy. I believe that's right. I don't know if anybody else knows that, but I think that's right. They donated this piece by Katagiri Roshi, which is Steve and Norm's, the founding teacher's, Steve's teacher, Katagiri. And so that's calligraphy of hidden body. And I don't know, do you have any further thoughts on it?
I think the final sort of, the Buddha nature that we all should have, like the jewel on the mountain, it's so we're all part of the same. But I mean, I don't know. I think that's probably a superficial answer, but the work
Oh,
that is similar.
I like that.
Yeah, I think it's really, it has puzzled me ever since I saw just a picture
Which is good, yeah.
of it. I'm like,
Yeah, I think that teaching is brought up in several different ways. Hidden body. And one way you hear of that is, or maybe one way that you can sort of reflect on it is the world can very easily show up in very distinct ways, where kind of there's this is this, that is that. We're kind of comparing things and maybe inadvertently valuing and judging things and things of that sort. And then hidden body is this understanding where what seems so solid and real to us, which is according to our ideas, can fade into wholeness. In the case of these images of like the heron and bright moonlight, it's not that the distinction goes away, but it's the belief in this sort of an absolute belief in a fragmented world can just very, of its own accord, very naturally drop away. But I think that's one way it was kind of spoken to me about that particular calligraphy. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. I was thinking about that. Yeah, that's a beautiful piece. Anything else? Any other camping stories recently? It's been a good season. There wasn't any mosquitoes, pretty much.
No
The
way.
last, yeah, I was
That's
there.
impossible.
I know, like one maybe. It was, yeah. The prior year, it was probably the most I had ever experienced. And to remember it, sometimes I kind of think of, okay, how am I going to remember how dense it was? And I was thinking, okay, just like a space this big had 10 mosquitoes in it. Like I could put my hand around 10 mosquitoes right there, and it was like, okay, that's a lot.
Perfect. Down.
They came down here? Okay, yeah. Vacationing down in the city.
We've had one.
Okay, yeah. Sure, yeah.
I had a question. Can you repeat, Jed, kind of like that the opening statement you had about the mountain of form? Can you just repeat that saying or that phrase?
And this comes from a koan in the Blue Cliff Records. I didn't write the number down. This is actually just part of the koan, but Yuen Men said to the community, within heaven and earth, through space and time, there is a jewel hidden inside the mountain of form.
Okay. So as you were giving your talk, had this thought. I don't remember the exact like statements, but I remember there's a little teaching I heard here once or twice about there were a couple of monks on a boat, and they were arguing about if the flag was moving or if the wind was moving. And the teacher said, "Your mind is moving." And as you were talking, I was thinking, I wonder if the that jewel of the mountain of form is the mind. It's like when you kind of think about it, it's like the mind is the thing which seems to be slapping on labels and qualifying things and debating about what's going on. And maybe it's just that awareness that we tap into and we can kind of let it relax enough to just experience what's there. I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts if there's any, anything within that little story.
It seems like that's probably what was, from my perspective, what was the story you're talking about, what it's trying to redirect our attention back to. And the jewel, it's just like so many ways in Buddhism, it's easy to maybe think of it as something to attain or something different, something to aspire to, or it's going to take, you know, certain things to do to find it. But this type of teaching here is, I think, a way of really just bringing us back to what's immediate. And some teachers in particular have a great ability to do that, and I think that's the case here. So yeah, what's ultimately being spoken of is, no matter what it is, the oak tree, what we find is, it's beyond description in any way. What is completely apparent is actually reality itself. But it's kind of like, very quickly we get into trouble, because then I think, okay, it's me experiencing the oak tree or whatever, but actually we can just set all that aside. And this understanding is, I think, much more akin to just putting your hand in water. Nothing needs to be said at all. Whether something is in this room or, you know, outside, away or anything, we can just set all that down. But that, yeah, that's a great story, Tina. Thanks. Yeah, Mary.
It was right at Richmond. They weren't in a boat.
Okay, yeah, I didn't know.
They were watching a flag. And one monk says, "The flag is moving." And the other monk says, "No, the wind is moving." And then the Zen master says, "No, mind is moving." Mind with a capital M. We're into wholeness, totality. And you can't separate the flag from the wind, from the entire experience.
Yeah, I like the boat, though. I want to be in the boat.
Yeah. It was my talking of sailing.
Do you remember that Saturday Night Live skit, "I'm on a boat and it's real"? No one?
I missed that. No.
It was real.
What's the skit that everybody knows? Like, needs more cowbell? Or
cowbell.
Yeah, that's a big one. Wild and crazy guys. Anything else at all?
I'm thinking about the rock sitting right behind you, Jed. There's a...
So people can hear you on Zoom.
Right. Yeah. There's a, for me, there's an image of Buddha in that rock.
Mm-hmm.
And in the form of the rock, much in the way that the jewel is in the form of the mountain. Both a jewel and a mountain are things that we experience with our senses. And the thing that discerns the jewel from a mountain is our idea of what it is. And I was thinking that if you see through the permanence of, or the apparent permanence of form, a jewel, a mountain could just as easily be a jewel. It's made out of the same stuff. Just like if you see through my conception of a potato rock. I can see the image for me of manifestation of Buddhahood in that stone from where I'm sitting, which is right behind you, almost outlining your form as you sit. Mm-hmm. And so the difference between those two is just my idea. Is that a rock or is that Buddha nature? And what is hidden or what hides the jewel in the mountain and what hides the Buddha in that rock is our ideas about what is there.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that that is a permanent thing that we have conceived of.
Yeah, thanks for that. I think of that idea too, that sort of seemingly hides things. That's right there, the opportunity to wake up. The thought itself is the expression of Buddha nature too. I think about, but remember bowing here first, it didn't really fit too well with me at first, kind of wasn't sure what I was doing. But then maybe part of this understanding was coming through that no matter what we bow to, we're bowing, or we're collecting the mind to sort of have this opportunity to bow to just this true nature. And then other things I think came from that too, where I'll be out in the everyday world, and, you know, somebody else seems like kind of the culprit of the problem that I'm having. And I know Norm Randolph had a beautiful way of helping me see that if we can sort of set down that idea of self, other, inside, outside, it just makes interactions in general so much easier. You could see that what is actually experienced is this great, the great being of another person is not according to what we think actually, what is actually happening is this true experience. And for me, it's just, I think, helpful kind of to have a bit of, you know, take a step back a little bit from my ideas a little bit, and then sort of this natural respect can rise. But yeah, it's a great image here, isn't it? The rock. So thanks. Thanks for your words there. Thank you. Anything else at all? Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.